Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David James here with you. Talking Titans. The NFL draft has come and gone. And to help us break down the Titans draft class, we go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Mike Herndon of PaulKaharski.com. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Doing great. How are you guys?
We're doing well. Thanks for joining us again. So for those who don't know Mike Herndon, he is a big Texas Longhorns fan. So Mike is very familiar with linebacker Anthony Hill, who was the Titans' second-round pick over the weekend. Mike, how do you see Hill fitting in with the Titans and Robert Saleh's scheme?
Yeah, I think he's a great fit, to be honest. You look at, some of these linebackers that they've had in the past. Bobby Wagner specifically comes to mind, who, coincidentally is Anthony Hill's favorite linebacker. Growing up, and it was also his comp on NFL.com and their scouting report. But Hill is a guy who's really a complete linebacker. He has prototypical size, 6'2", 240-ish, and then runs in the low 4.5s. I think he's 4.51 at the combine. Just kind of a freak athlete. Texas played him at the Mike linebacker position primarily over the last couple years, and then would move him around to the edge as well on third downs occasionally, because he is a very good pass rusher off the edge in addition to his normal linebacking duty. So he was able to kind of line up all over the place, and I think that would be a potential use for him here with the Titans as well, just simply because they do need some speed off the edge. They added a big edge rusher in Keldrick Falk. But speed off the edge is something that they kind of need in that group, and Hill could provide that as well as, serving as their primary Mike linebacker. And this is a guy that showed up at Texas, was a starter by halfway through his true freshman season, was calling the defense by his true sophomore season, and was the, alpha leader of that group. And that was a Texas defense that was really good in 24 and 25. So I think he's going to be a big help to this group, and Saleh will be able to get the most out of him. I'm confident of that.
Mike, I know you liked the Titans selection of Carnell Tate at number 4 overall. We attempted to set expectations for Tate's rookie year yesterday, so let me get your opinion. What would you consider a successful rookie season for Carnell Tate, and how will you judge him in year one?
I'd say if I'm looking to put a statistical number on it, I'd say, 900 yards, 7 or 8 touchdowns would be, a successful season. It's not going to blow you away, but that's a successful rookie season for a guy, who's 21 years old, one of the younger players in the class. But I think he's pretty pro ready. As far as how I'll actually judge his season, I think a lot of it comes down to context. You have to be able to watch the games. Is he winning? Is he serving as a focal point for the offense? Because I think that's ultimately what they want him to be. And whether that happens right away or down the road, I think that'll tell you about how they feel about his development and how much they trust him. But I think that'll be kind of how I judge him. Just watching how he plays, how much they trust him early, and I think that'll be the kind of the tell on where his career may be going.
Now that the roster is more or less set for this coming season, do you think the Titans have done enough to help stimulate Cam Ward's development in year two?
I think so. I think the offensive line, there's spots on the offensive line that are a question mark, obviously, and remain a question mark following the draft now. But if you look at what they did, they go out and they add one of the, probably 3 or 4 best receivers in free agency in Wandell Robinson, the guy coming off a 1,000-yard season. They add, obviously, the number four overall pick in Carnell Tate, who I think was pretty clearly the best wide receiver in this draft class. So they had two, you know, really high-end pass catchers. They were able to retain Ridley on a reduced deal, which I actually do think is pretty significant, because a combo of Tate, Ridley, Robinson, throwing Gunnar Helm, you've got DK and Iyo Manor that you can rotate in, you know, kind of on a matchups basis, or just, you know, trying to get different packages in there, especially for DK. I mean, that's a real wide receiving core, and a real group of pass catchers that they can go and win with, I think. So if they can protect him well enough, absolutely. I think they've done enough to give Cam Ward a fighting chance in his second season here.
We'll talk with Mike Herndon discussing the Tennessee Titans in their draft. Now, Mike, looking at the draft, and I know a lot of people were shocked, and me included, not necessarily that they drafted Carnell Tate, but at that position in the draft that they drafted him, that they took him instead of moving down. But do you think, after sort of thinking about all of this, it was either Love or Tate in their mind? They were going to try to bolster their offense with either one of those guys. And if Love was there, they would take him. But if not, then they went with Tate. Do you think there was ever a true discussion, even until the last moments, of taking a defensive guy?
I think if David Bailey had been there, that may have been a discussion, just because I think he was pretty far and away the cleanest edge rush prospect in the draft. So I think maybe that would have been a discussion, but I think once the board fell the way it did, I think Tate was pretty easily the best option for them and kind of where they needed to go.
I thought you was going on. I'm sorry about that, Mike. Now, looking at what they did from a defensive standpoint, because, again, you look at the last two drafts and what they added free agency, how do you think this team has positioned themselves moving into this season and beyond?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think they're going to be better without question. I think having a coaching staff that has a lot more experience and I think, you know, can only really go up from where the Callahan era left off is going to help tremendously as well. But I think you're looking at a team that now has a front seven that I think is a legitimate strength relative to, you know, other NFL teams. I mean, that front seven, especially if Hill and Falk are who they think they are, obviously, and who I think they are, personally, I think that front seven could be one of the best front sevens in football. Like, you know, maybe from, you're not getting past, you know, 7-8 on the list before you get to the Titans with everybody that they've added, with, you know, John Franklin Myers and, you know, the obviously the draft picks that they just brought in, Jermaine Johnson. I mean, they've added a lot of talent up front, and I think that's going to be a real strength. And then you look at the offense and Cam Ward going into year two. He's now got, you know, like we just talked about, some professional receiving core to throw to. I think this could be a real team that puts themselves in the conversation late in the season to maybe grab that last wild card spot or, you know, win 9 or 10 games. I think that's absolutely in play.
Now, last year, no one would have pegged DK as a guy that would have had a breakout season and be a Pro Bowler. But he came in and he seemed to be more NFL ready than anyone, even the quarterback. Who's going to be, or who do you look at as the DK of this year's draft for the Titans? Outside of Carnell Tate. Yeah. Let's say outside of the first round, Carnell Tate and Keldrick Falk.
Yeah. And I'll leave Hill off of that discussion too, because I think he's going to step in and play right away. But if we're looking at day three guys, you know, I think, you know, the two offensive linemen, Coogan and Carmona, both have a pretty clear path to a playing time. And I mean, they've got some veterans to beat out, but that's certainly somebody that could win a role right away. And, but I really like Singleton, Nicholas Singleton, the running back that they took in the fifth round. I mean, he is an absolute speed demon. He's got excellent receiving skills out of the backfield, which is, I really think, going to be his ticket to playing time this year. I think he could earn a third down role pretty quickly. And I think, he could be a guy that we look back at, you know, this time next year and think, okay, they got a guy who can project to be their starting running back next year, potentially. So it'll be interesting to see how the running back room plays out. But I think Singleton's got a ton of upside. And I think that Penn State situation last year was a total mess. And if you looked at, you know, kind of his production as a freshman and as a junior, especially, he would have gone much higher had he come out after last year, I think.
Mike Herndon is with us from PaulKarski.com. Mike, Dave Ziegler, the assistant GM, had an interesting answer about why Tate was so unanimously the guy at four. I'm curious about why do you think it wasn't Arvell Reese, based on what he said. What do you deduce from that? Because I can remember when we first cracked open, this was probably back in January, the initial mock drafts, so many people had Reese as the number one guy on the list. So why were they so sure it wasn't him?
You know, and I struggled with Reese this entire draft cycle and you know, was lower on him than consensus. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm coming from with this. But my problem with Reese was always I thought he was the second best off-ball linebacker on his own team behind Sonny Styles, which, you know, Styles is a great linebacker prospect. But if you're going to take an off-ball guy, I want the guy who provides, you know, A-plus coverage in Styles more than the kind of wrecking ball in Reese. So I like Styles a little bit better as an off-ball player. And if you're projecting him to edge, you know, Reese played like, you know, 100-something snaps at edge. So you're projecting him to play a position he's never played before. And look, it worked out for Micah Parsons. I don't know that that's going to happen all the time with these ultra-athletic linebacker prospects. That's not going to be every ultra-athletic 240-pound linebacker turns into Micah Parsons as an edge rusher in the pros. So I think I had a hard time with that projection with him. And I think ultimately maybe that was their hesitation there as well, that, hey, this is not a necessarily clean projection onto our system. And we'd rather just grab the receiver who is a clean projection and, you know, probably is pretty close to the same level player.
As you size up the AFC South for right now, how much of a gap do you think the Titans may or may not have closed?
I think they've closed the gap. Jacksonville and Houston obviously had great seasons last year. And I don't think the Titans have necessarily put themselves in the conversation to win the division just yet. But would it shock me if they did next year? Not necessarily. I think, you know, Houston's got offensive line problems. You know, you look at Jacksonville and they had an odd draft themselves and maybe played a little bit above their level at times last season. So I think it'll be an interesting battle. I think they've caught the Colts is kind of where I'm at. I think if I'm looking at the AFC South, I've got kind of Houston and then maybe Jacksonville, Tennessee, Indy at this point. But I think they've definitely closed the gap with everybody and could surge past them here pretty shortly.
Mike Herndon of Paul Kaharski has been our guest on D Mace. Vingan and Donick, of course, you can catch Paul Kaharski himself on Robbie and Rex Road tomorrow morning. Mike, as always, a pleasure. Thank you for your insight. We'll catch up soon.
Absolutely. Enjoyed it, guys.
615-737-1025. One of my favorite things has come out now that the 2026 draft is over. And we'll discuss that coming up next, as well as some sad news. And not sad in a way that you're really going to be upset, but I'm a little PO'd about it. And we'll discuss that as well. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. Continuing to pull from Diana Russini's playlist that was uncovered on Spotify from late 2022 that was sent to someone named Mike. We graded the playlist at the beginning of the show. If you missed it, you can find it wherever you find your podcasts. If you missed it, I do not like the playlist. There are too many playlist no-nos on that playlist from Diana Russini to the Mike. We can only assume which Mike it is. Maybe it was Mike Herndon of PaulKarski.com who just joined
us. In theory,
Mike Tyson.
Anybody named Mike.
It could be Mike Tyson, Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Michael Myers.
Michael Myers, the comedian, or yes, the serial comedian. Killer?
Both.
Either.
Either, yes.
Mike from down the street?
Yes. Yeah. So here's what I teased was making me sad and actually a little angry. It's been reported in multiple places that the men's and women's NCAA basketball tournaments are expected to formally pass approval for expansions to 76 teams.
Boom.
Let's just let's just invite everybody.
Participation trophy.
Let's invite the South Harmon Institute of Technology to the NCAA tournament. Just what we need. More mediocre to below average teams in the NCAA tournament. Matt Norlander of CBS reported that the opening round will be split between at-large and auto bids, expanding out current first four format. All 16 seeds and half the 15s will be slotted into the Tuesday, Wednesday of the opening round. The other half will be a mix depending on team quality, 11s, 12s, and maybe a 13.
This is getting out of hand, Willie. This is getting out of hand. I mean, more is not always better or merrier, okay? It's starting to get to a point where does the – because when are they going to start? Now they've expanded it. Are they going to start earlier?
No, the plan is, according to ESPN,
or just play more
that
games,
the traditional 64-team men's bracket will still begin on Thursday. Mm-hmm. The major difference here will be more teams who qualify as traditional at-larges will have to play earlier in the 60 than the 64-team bracket.
So they'll still do – on the 2 days that we see the first four,
there'll just be more games.
There'll be
more games.
Double that, right?
But postseason play, postseason play, not just in the NCAA tournament. I'm talking about across all sports. Postseason play should be exclusive. Mm-hmm. You need to have a great season to qualify for the playoffs. Look, you know how much I love hockey. Half the NHL makes the Stanley Cup playoffs. I don't love that. To me, I think the number should be less than 50% in professional leagues.
So does strength of schedule mean anything now that you're adding more teams?
Yes. I'm sure it'll mean the same.
So the first four out in this past year's NCAA tournament, Auburn, which won the NIT, mm-hmm. Oklahoma, San Diego State, and Indiana, just what we need. Auburn, who went 17-16 in the regular season, with a 4-13 record in quad one games, just what we need. We need them in the tournament.
Right, so they would have gotten in with strength of schedule.
Sorry, Auburn fans, but
and you know, give them credit; they turned around and won the NIT to pad their argument
and
a little
bit more.
And
the NIT means a lot to you personally. I know this.
It does. It does. I have a ring. It's a nice ring.
Where is the ring?
It's in my house.
Is it on display?
No.
If it were an NCAA championship ring, would it be on display?
Oh, good question.
It'd be on his finger.
Yes. He would never take it off.
You occasionally see somebody wearing a big championship ring like that. I can't imagine doing that.
Unless you're
wearing it around.
Function
putting it on display, I'll just put that on display for you, Adam. Okay.
So this means you're going to get maybe two extra teams throughout the conferences.
Yeah.
Two, maybe three. Because you figure Auburn would have been in this year, and so there would have been another team in the SEC.
Well, you take the Oklahoma was one of the first four out, so Oklahoma gets in. Indiana's in the Big Ten.
Yes.
Right? I have no idea which conference San Diego State is in.
Mountain West.
Yeah. Mountain West, okay. So the first four out, two SEC, one Big Ten, one Mountain West.
Yeah. So on average, you'll probably get an extra team or two.
But there's four more on top of that. It's,
yeah.
Right? There's 76, right?
I couldn't find the next four out. I found the first four out. I could not find the next four out.
So, but there's eight new spots, and that doesn't, on paper, seem like a lot. But I do wonder, like, for the eight teams that are going to try to grab those spots, there's going to be more teams that have a similar resume. So, like, Joe Lunardi is going to have to work even that much harder. And you are going to get the teams that I just think, you know, are probably – you want it to mean something to get to the tournament. Like, I've always felt like that is the thing. Is even though they've gone to 68, I still feel like everybody who makes it is deserving of being there and has had a great season to get there.
Okay, let's say this, because we did have arguments last year where, who was it, Belmont? Was it Belmont or
Miami,
Belmont,
Ohio?
No, Belmont lost. Who lost their conference championship game and couldn't make it? Which conference? Well, was
Miami, you're talking about?
Miami of Ohio.
That was the one. Yeah.
End up losing.
Belmont
their,
also won their league with a much better rating than Miami of Ohio, but they lost in the first round of their conference tournament.
So, and that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. If you win your conference during the regular season, maybe this is for the teams that get into conference play. They are the best team in their conference because they prove it over the season. They lose in the first or second round, and then by the old rules, they're automatically out. And someone gets in that maybe, you know, it's not even better than them if you're just talking about the totality of the season.
But you know what?
So that gets that team in.
The teams with the higher budgets that can really pinpoint their non-conference schedule. And I heard Matt Painter, the head coach for Purdue, talk about this in a lot of detail, and I never really thought about it. But you can, if you budget correctly, if you pay, if you have the resources, you can schedule your way into a good strength of schedule slash. What are they? It's not the RPI anymore.
Net.
It's the net rating, right? The net rating is so big. And you see it a lot of times. It's very frustrating for teams that are trying to play catch-up. But your net rating gets locked in. And if you're in that 36 to 40, you're going to be pretty safe. And you're not going to free fall, even if you lose some games. And Matt Painter pointed out, schedule-wise, if you schedule the right teams, you can schedule your way. Now, you got to win a certain amount of games. But the Belmonts, the Miami Ohios, the teams that don't quite have that budget or the resources, they're going to have a harder time being able to schedule a rating that's going to get them over the hump. So I worry that it's going to be just the extra Big Ten team, the extra Big 12 team that's going to snag those spots and not the, quote, little guy.
I hate it, okay? I hate it. I think postseason play should be exclusive. We don't invite everybody. That's what making the playoffs is about. You have to be good enough to make it. So I don't like any idea. I don't like expanded postseason play in any situation. But this makes me sad.
I'll tell you what I'd like to see.
What's that?
From the as a counter from the little conferences, I would put my team in. I would put my regular season team as the team that's got my automatic bid. If you want to play a conference tournament to see who the next best team is, if you think that could help a second team get in, do that. But I would take my champion. This would be controversial. But I would say if Belmont wins their league, if Tennessee State wins their league, if Austin Peay wins their league in the regular season, that's who I'm putting in the tournament. That's how I would
do it. But it should be that way. You know? It's that
way. Well, they
way.
Want the
it's
drama.
That way
they, want really... the, they want the conference tournament for the TV money and all that stuff. It would hurt that.
But if you look at conferences like the Big Ten, Big 12, whatever, their conference champion minus the tournament, their conference champions are in. You know, even if they don't have a conference champion, if they don't have a tournament, their conference champion from the regular season is automatically in. And we don't think about it because we figure, well, they're going to have the SEC or the Big Ten tournament and say they win the tournament. But once they win the regular season, they're in.
Yeah, when's the last time the regular season champ of the SEC or the Big Ten wasn't in the – so it's a quasi-automatic bid. And the smaller leagues don't have that.
I do want to talk about something. Now that the 2026 NFL draft is over, God bless – all of the NFL draft analysts, because the 2026 NFL draft ended 2 days ago, 3 days ago, and they're already looking ahead to the 2027 draft.
Yes, they are. And that's what they do.
And I don't mean to pick on Dane Brugler here, who I think does a fantastic job for The Athletic, but he published his early 2027 NFL mock draft. And there's a lot of chatter about how this is one of the most anticipated classes in recent memory. Just for kicks and giggles, here is the top of Dane Brugler's early 2027 mock draft. Number one, to the Arizona Cardinals, Arch Manning. Number two, to the Miami Dolphins, Jeremiah Smith. Number three, to the Cleveland Browns, Dante Moore. Number four to the New York Jets, Leonard Moore, cornerback, Notre Dame. And number five to the Tennessee Titans, Dylan Stewart, edge, South Carolina. And this is what I thought would be instructive. I went back and I found Dane Brugler's 2026 early NFL mock draft from April 29th, 2025. So 1 year ago tomorrow. And it's really interesting. For example, the number six overall pick in Brugler's 2026 way too early mock draft was Keldrick Faulk, who was the number 31 overall pick to the Tennessee Titans. He was number six on this list. The number 12 overall pick in this draft, the Seattle Seahawks, Anthony Hill, who went number 60 overall to the Tennessee Titans. Carnell Tate, by the way, 13th in this mock draft from a year ago to the Miami Dolphins.
If that's not a great indicator of how a player's pathway, every player's pathway goes in different directions, it's anything but a straight line, right? And, you know, there's ways that people do it now. They redraft after a year, after 2 years, after 5 years. But it's a great example of why you can't get so wrapped up in, hey, why did they take Carnell Tate 4? Everybody had him at 7. Why? How could you possibly do that? It really doesn't matter after they start playing. I keep making this point. It's like with Corey Davis. Everybody's like, but he was the fifth pick in the draft. He was, and it's going to chase Cam Ward as the, quote, first pick in the draft. But once you're drafted, you're drafted.
Yeah.
Right? And if you can play, you can play. And so I think it's a fun exercise to do. I've never seen it. I've never done what you just did and go back a couple years. And, you know, it'd be fun to go back 3 years
so
to see what they had.
Let's look at Keldrick Faulk. So in his 2026 early mock draft, which was published a year ago, Dane Brugler of The Athletic had Keldrick Faulk going number six overall to the Carolina Panthers. Here's what Brugler wrote about Faulk at the time. Quote, "It was impossible to ignore Faulk and his ability to disrupt the quarterback and stuff the run when studying the Auburn-Cal tape from last season. Listed at 6'6" and 288 pounds with long arms, Faulk, according to scouts, will be in the conversation to be the first defensive lineman drafted next year." Keep that in mind. Here's what Brugler, the very same, wrote about Faulk in his draft guide before this year's draft. Quote, Faulk has more, quote-unquote, almost plays than impact ones on this tape. But you bet on a developing 21-year-old player with his exciting traits. The character and upside are promising, but how early a team drafts him is dependent on its appetite for risk. That's the same player written about one year apart.
Yeah.
That's so it's fascinating when you think about it. So what do you I could make an argument that doesn't bode well for Faulk.
What I thought.
But I could also make an argument that, hey, look, it's the same guy with the same traits. For whatever reason, he just didn't have the great production. But it doesn't mean he couldn't bounce back and be great. And he's super young for relative, right? This was his first year to be eligible to be drafted. So he's going to be coming in as a young rookie, which I think should be noted.
I think year in year, that's why I know they do it, for just giving people a heads up on potential prospects that you should be looking out for. To get people familiarized with the player. But football season, it changed from year to year, and players change from year to year, and situations change from year to year. That's why, you know, when you put these grades on these young men the year prior and where they're going to be drafted, it's like, man, you got to almost wait until, you know, the season starts to really get an assessment on who these guys are because, you know, for instance, you have a guy that may be ranked in the top five the year prior, and they fire the coach, or he chooses to transfer. That changes the dynamics of his potential development. And then you come around the next draft period, and it's, oh, you said this guy was going to go fifth overall. He ended up going in the bottom half of the first round. Not to say he's still not a good player, but it's hard to get a bead on how these kids are going to develop.
I think you go to other sports, right? This is why the NHL draft is so maddening sometimes because everybody's 18. Mm-hmm. when you draft him. So they could go. We don't even have the three college years to see how they grow. You have to take them right then and there, which is fraught with all kinds of risk. But I'll use baseball. The two most dominant major league pitchers last year, Tarek Skubal and Paul Skenes, who still might be the most dominant two pitchers this year, neither of them were A, guys that anybody was really looking to draft when they were 18, and neither was a major college recruit in baseball. Skenes turned into that, but Skenes went to Air Force to be a catcher when he was 18, and now he's the most dominant pitcher in Major League Baseball. So I don't think anything's different about the other sports. They're the same way. So when you get mad at a team for not being able to draft, it is a little tougher than you think sometimes.
I thought the differences in how Brugler wrote about Keldrick Falk year over year was pretty remarkable.
That's unbelievable. That's amazing.
Same player.
Read. Yeah.
615-737-1025.
And then what version of the Titans getting this coming year? That's all that matters.
That is true. 615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction to that. Any and everything is on the table as we wrap up the show. Next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Again, I cannot see Mike Vrabel under any circumstances listening to Papa Roach.
But he was 25.
I know.
You can't see him like in the Ohio State locker room.
That's what
or
I'm
the,
saying.
The, I can see a young it. Member of the Patriots.
I can see it.
I can.
Oh, was definitely.
Was he on the Steelers before the Patriots?
He was the Steelers, yeah.
Yeah.
Was it Kansas City?
He played for Cowher, didn't he?
I think Cowher drafted him, went to Kansas City.
I think the
City.
Patriots traded him to the Chiefs late in his career. I think he started with the Steelers, if I'm remembering this.
Yeah, you're right. He started with the Steelers. So he went to the...
He played for the Steelers from 1997 to 2000.
Okay, so 2000, yeah. That's when Papa Roach came out with this song.
Exactly. Yes. Definitely.
And so wait, when did he go to the Patriots?
In 2001.
Okay.
He was there from 2001 through 2008.
So a 25-year-old Mike Vrabel could have been jamming out to Papa Roach.
Oh, definitely.
If he wasn't, then some of his teammates were, probably.
Maybe he was there and also listening to it, but I can't imagine him being the one, hey, put on the Papa Roach.
Oh, why he not? Came in with the Papa Roach, man.
He might be able. He might have been that
guy.
Yeah,
he came in with the Papa Roach.
I just can't get there. Maybe I'm wrong.
You don't think he had angst? Like, I think he had
He was listening to it on game day coming up to the stadium.
I think he had angst as he was hounded by that random reporter at the airport.
He was holding in the angst. He did a good job of that. He did a good job not
TMZ put out the video.
Oh, jeez. Like,
look, he's a loser guy. You reap what you sow.
Hey.
You reap
what you sow. Brought it upon yourself.
That dude followed him all the way through the airport to the car.
He was not letting him go.
He was like, Mr. Vrabel, Eddie?
I know. He's trying to be as polite as possible.
Do you feel like the Patriots have your back, Mr. Vrabel? Oh, man.
Oh, well.
But before the break, we were looking back. We were talking about Dane Brugler's way too early 2027 mock draft. Then I pulled up his way too early 2026 mock draft to see how right he was. Now I've pulled up his way too early 2025 mock draft, published April 30th, 2024.
Now, this is going to blow your mind.
This is going to blow your mind. This was Dane Brugler in April of 2024, following the conclusion of the 2024 draft, trying to predict the 2025 draft, the Cam Ward draft, 1 year out.
All right, so this would be the draft or the college football season where I'm trying to think who the national champ was in 2024. The conclusion of that season. Was it Michigan? Was that Harbaugh's Michigan team?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That was Ohio State. Ohio State won in 2024.
Okay.
So, okay. Ohio State, Michigan, and then obviously Indiana.
Michigan won in 2023. Michigan won the 2023 college football.
Okay, but the draft is 2024.
Yes. Yeah, the year was 2024.
So it was coming off of Michigan's win.
This is why
in the spring of 24. I shouldn't have thrown that into the mix. But just as a reference point.
Yes.
So Cam Ward was a quarterback at Washington State that season.
Yes.
Had not transferred to Miami yet. Carson Beck was the quarterback at Georgia that year.
So again, in April of 2024, following the conclusion of that draft, Dane Brugler of The Athletic published what he thought the 2025 draft would look like 1 year out, with the number 2 pick in that draft, according to Dane Brugler, the Tennessee Titans select Carson Beck.
Wow.
Carson Beck, by the way, drafted in the third round this weekend to the Arizona Cardinals. Cam Ward, not found. Cam Ward, not in the first round of Dane Brugler's way too early 2025 mock draft.
And I think Carson Beck's, I think his stock was dropping even before the injury that he had in the playoffs. I think his stock was sort of dropping before that because he was inconsistent.
But he, I don't think he had gotten injured that year. He got injured the next year.
The next year, yeah.
In the SEC championship game and then transferred to Miami. His path is really interesting to follow because I do think for a while people thought he was definitely going to be that guy.
And he turned out not to be. And then you throw in the shoulder injury he had. His stock just started to plummet. But then on the other side, Cam Ward wasn't even on the list of potential first-round picks. And lo and behold, he's the number one pick in the draft. So that's how this thing is like a pendulum. It can go from one side to the other very quickly.
Here are some notable names in this 2025 one-year-out mock draft from Dane Brugler. Number one pick, Mykel Williams, defensive lineman from Georgia. Carson Beck, number two. Abdul Carter, number seven. Travis Hunter, number nine. Tet McMillan, number 11. Quinn Ewers, number 14.
Wow. And Quinn Ewers,
but imagine
drafted,
a world,
what,
imagine a world where Carson Beck was the Titans' top pick in 2025. Imagine a world.
Man. Well, we would have hoped he would have developed into an elite franchise quarterback. So
You know what caught me too, what you said about his current one that he just put out. Dane Brugler put out next year's, right? He's now trying to predict who will be the top guys next year to watch. He's got Dante Moore from Oregon as a top five guy.
Top three, I think.
Top three. Yeah. So all he's saying is basically everything that had him stay at Oregon this year, if he stays another year, he will become a top three pick.
That says a lot about Arch Manning, Jeremiah Smith, Dante Moore.
And I think we would all agree, Arch Manning's got a long way to go before he really looks the part of a guy that's going to be picked that high, right? And there's confidence, there's belief that he could get there in a year, and he's a little younger, right? But Moore, that's surprising to me.
Moore, his last outing wasn't good in college, in the playoffs. It was bad.
Bad.
And that was one reason why I think, because there still were some questions on whether, you know, how would he translate, you know, considering – you know, the competition he played against, and Oregon was always blowing somebody out.
And that was Oregon losing to Illinois.
Exactly.
I mean, not Illinois, Indiana.
They just made him look extremely bad. And I know after that game, it was like, okay, I need to stay in another year because I am absolutely not ready. So, you know, these things change in a matter of games, you know, or in a matter of years, whether, you know, the projection I had on you stays the same or get better or worse.
One texter, Travis, says, Adam, who is the player in the NFL who looks like they are a metalhead? I have the perfect answer for you. Have either of you seen Jennings Dunker?
Nah.
First of all, his name is Jennings with a G. G-E-N-N-I-N-G-S. His last name is Dunker. D-U-N-K-E-R. Mm-hmm. Iowa guard, drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers in the third round. I'm about to show the two of you a picture of Jennings Dunker.
Am I going to say to myself, yes, that looks like a Jennings dunker?
Yes. Are you ready?
Yes.
One, two,
give it
three.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yep, definitely. That's Jennings dunker.
Like, that's Jennings dunker.
It's like he looks like he should be on an Adam Sandler's movie.
Let's describe Jennings dunker for those of you who can't see.
He would be
him.
One of his boys.
Before the days where you could actually go on YouTube and see the people talking on the radio. Back in the day, I used to get this a lot, and I still do occasionally. Somebody will recognize my voice or something, maybe hasn't ever seen me, and say, hey, I recognize your voice. And I used to get this a lot more. You don't really look like you sound on the radio. And really, when you think about it, how would you ever know what the person sounds like? They used to be like the great mystery of radio. You wonder what the person talking on their end looks like, he or she. But Jennings Dunker,
yeah,
he looks like you would.
Let's describe. Like sound like. Let's describe Jennings Dunker. He has an epic red mullet.
Ooh. Epic is the
epic,
word.
Nice. Epic ginger mullet.
Big, thick
yes. mullet.
We're talking.
We got some serious rise. Yes. He's getting a couple, yes. 2 or 3 inches in the height department.
Oh yes,
mullet.
We're talking.
That thing's like a Roman helmet, boy.
We're talking like we're talking Kenny Powers here.
Extreme like Kenny Powers.
He's also got half sleeve tattoos on both arms. Nice mustache. This dude, total metalhead.
He should be hanging out with Kelsey. Yeah.
they could.
He and Kelsey would be good buddies.
By the way, Travis has looked up Jennings Dunker, and he says, sold. I told you. Absolutely. That'll do it for us today. We had fun. We hope you did as well. We will be back tomorrow. We'll continue the conversation about the Titans, the Predators. Who knows what Mike Vrabel story is going to come out between now and 3 o'clock tomorrow. Maybe we will have our obligatory 3 o'clock Mike Vrabel segment. We'll all find out together, but we'll see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock.
Be loved. Love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team love you. You hear that music. Don't you forget about us, because we will not forget about you. Be safe out there, because it's going to rain. So stay in if you don't need to go out. But we will see you, and you will listen to us tomorrow at 3 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. Peace.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.